This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, I'm back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up, what a disappointment for James Harden and the Sixers. Meanwhile, Miami Heat, they check all the boxes. We'll get to which athletes have fallen off far too quickly. And I'll give you my favorite pick. I don't know if it's my favorite, but I'll give you my first pick. Favorite for now. First pick of the NFL season now that we have the schedule. Never too soon to start looking ahead with the season just under 4 months away. Get to that coming up in the final hour here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Hey, happy birthday to Charleston's own Darius Rucker.
Oh, well, Darius, we know he's listening, so right? Happy birthday, kind sir.
Yeah, happy birthday, Darius. Turns 56 today.
Voice of an angel. Unbelievable.
I've always said, right, it's very impressive. We've talked about this before, and so people reached out to the show with their suggestions. There's not a lot of people that can say they've done what Darius has done, where he had the successful band with Hootie and the Blowfish, and then forget just going on a solo career. He pulled a 180 and went into country and has had a successful solo career in a different genre. There's not a lot of musicians you could find out there that had successful careers in multiple genres like Darius has. And so that really is impressive. He's won Grammys for both Hootie and the Blowfish and then his solo country career. So you don't get a lot of that. So pretty cool. Happy birthday to Darius. It's a pet peeve of mine that people always think it's I hate when people screw up band names thinking it's a person. Like Leonard Skinner, they think the lead singer, Leonard Skinner, that's his name, Leonard Skinner. And in the case of Hootie and the Blowfish, right, like they think Darius, he's Hootie. His name's Hootie. And then, that probably has to drive him crazy. Then he goes on a solo tour, like, hey, Hootie. Like, no, his name's Darius. Anyways, happy birthday to Darius.
Do you think that his solo career really took off when Wagon Wheel hit the airwaves? Was that it? Was that the song that was like, all right, Darius can do this on his own?
It's a good question. So now I'm not really as into the country music as probably most people around here.
Northern.
Yeah. So, but I will say that was probably, if I remember back, and that song was when that song came out, that was a big deal. And all my friends, they loved it, and I'd always hear it wherever I went. So that was probably the first song. I'm trying to think back. That may have been the first song that put him on the map for me. Like, oh, Darius Rucker's doing country, and I kind of like this stuff. So for me, and probably for most people, mainstream, yes. If you're like a legitimate country fan or you're just from the area, you like Darius Rucker, you already knew what he was doing before that. But I could tell you, like, for me or the people I grew up with, yeah, that kind of, like, really put him on the map. Like, oh, wait a minute, he's got a good country career going. Now, Wagon Wheel, I assume people know that was originally a Bob Dylan song that he never finished. And then that other band, I think they were just in town recently. They did like the first version of it, Old Crow Medicine Show, something along those lines. And then Darius Rucker did his version, the most well-known. But Wagon Wheel was originally a Bob Dylan song that he never finished from like the 60s. And it's a great song. But yeah, happy birthday to Darius. Has won a bunch of great. Wouldn't it be cool to drink out of a Darius Rucker Grammy Award before? I wish I could do that. What would you rather do? Would you rather drink out of the Grammy Award, Trent, or would you rather drink out of a Stanley Cup? If you had your choice, Darius Rucker's Grammy or the Stanley Cup when, let's say, the Penguins win the Stanley Cup this year. What are you drinking out of?
Yeah, well, maybe past experiences have gifted some opportunities like that. But no, I believe Lord Stanley's Cup can hold, 14 12-ounce beers. Ooh. So, yeah, give me that all day long, and we're just loading them up, Luke. Loading them up.
Do the Penguins get it done tonight?
You know, I sure hope so. If Sidney Crosby's not on the ice, that gives me a little bit, actually a lot of bit of anxiety. And I still believe that player should be put in jail. But besides that, I do feel confident that the Pens can get it done if Sidney Crosby's on the ice.
That's a very divisive topic, by the way. Like, Penguins fans obviously are very ticked And Crosby's had a lot of concussion issues. And then I have a bunch of friends who are Rangers fans, and they were all texting this morning saying, you know, oh, it was just a, you know, it was a bad timing, yada, yada, yada. And I've seen people really debate it online. Penguins fans are really ticked off, and Ranger fans keep defending it about the shot Crosby took the other night. We'll see. This could be a good couple of days. The Heat advanced yesterday, and we'll see if the Penguins can get it done for Trent tonight. Which takes me to the Heat and their win last night over the Sixers, as the Heat beat the Sixers and move on. Now, this series, we opened the show talking about it because I find it interesting from both angles. You know, a buddy texted me last night, and I've had these conversations with some other people on this morning too, and, you know, everyone, if you follow the NBA, you watch us, and you wonder, like, how do the Heat do this? In fact, you know, there's that Twitter account that's like Freezing Cold Takes, and you could do plenty on the Miami Heat. People giving Jimmy Butler a hard time for choosing to go to Miami. I just saw one tweet a few moments ago during the commercial break where somebody from a few years ago tweeted, you know, you'd rather go play for a perennial 8 seed than compete for a championship. And now look at this. The Heat are in the conference finals two of the last 3 years. And it's really impressive what the Heat have accomplished. 4 years ago, Zach Lowe, friendly fire. Zach Lowe's an ESPN guy. But he said 4 years ago, I'm not sure any team in the league has a bleaker outlook than Miami. That was only 4 years ago. Since then, the Heat have gone to two conference finals now. They've gone to at least one NBA finals, potentially another one this year, and they've done it all without ever picking higher than 13th in the draft. It's not like they tanked. Right, they turned this thing around, and in large part because they brought in Jimmy Butler. And as the old saying goes, right, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we touched on this last hour, but Jimmy Butler had some comments after the game last night about the Sixers choosing Tobias Harris for about the same money, choosing him over Jimmy, leading to Jimmy going to Miami. And now Butler kind of gets the last laugh last night. As I said earlier, there's the thought that it takes the three C's to reach what you could call the big C, which is the championship. And the three C's to get there are confidence, culture, and conditioning. And the Heat check all three boxes. The confidence from what they accomplished in the bubble in 2020 or even throughout this regular season. The conditioning. I mean, compare them to the Sixers. What a difference. Look at James Harden in the second half. Look at Joel Embiid these last couple of games. Granted, because they're beat up, but that's all part of it. That's part of conditioning. Jimmy Butler is still sharp. Chris Paul is wearing down. I know he's older, but again, right, it all goes back to conditioning. The Heat, they got better. And then, of course, there's the culture, and this is the most important part for the Heat. I go back to that Zach Lowe quote from 4 years ago, where it looked like the Heat were in big trouble at the basement of the NBA, and quickly they turn it around. And you go back and you look for Miami, over the last 18 years, they've been to now 8 Eastern Conference Finals, almost half. And they've done it with 3 different eras, essentially. You had an old Shaq and a younger Dwayne Wade, and then you had LeBron, and you had those super teams where, of course, you're going to win some championships. And now you have this team where they're more like the 2004 Pistons. They're not being led by a Dwayne Wade or a LeBron James, not a star. Jimmy Butler's playing really well, but he's not on that level. They're just a good team, and they're well-coached, and this is now Eric Spoelstra, right? Eric Spoelstra was like the errand boy for LeBron James back then. LeBron tried to get him fired. Now he's turned himself, over time, into one of the best coaches in the league. And for the Heat, they've turned themselves into having one of the better cultures in the league. As I said earlier, the sign of a well-run company is if you could succeed at all times. No matter what direction, like the industry or the world's going, you always have it figured out. You could even change CEOs, or maybe it takes over, you know, new ownership. You ever go to a good restaurant, change his owners? Maybe it's just the location of the restaurant. But it doesn't matter. Like, they're doing really well. I grew up in Connecticut. In New Haven, they have 3 of the most well-known pizza places. One of them's Modern Pizza. They changed owners like 30 years ago. They're still considered one of the best pizza places in the country. There's something about it, about their charcoal grills and the recipes and maybe the location and whatever it is. Change ownership, still considered one of the best in the country in putting out pizza. Now, that's the sign of a well-run company, is that it doesn't matter about the changes in the industry, the times, the eras, the people, they still have success. We're going to find out about Netflix if they can weather the storm right now. Right? But you have had other companies like an Amazon always seemingly one step ahead. They get involved in a little bit of, now they're involved in the NFL. Right? They're doing a little bit of everything, and it's all successful. American Express started out as a company just for express mail in New York alone, then extended to the other states and the rest of the country, started doing money orders and traveler's checks, then eventually to credit cards. And they were successful every step of the way. And so similar to the Heat as well, because when you look at Miami, It's a great city. People love to visit. People love to. It's the, you know, the Miami flu for the visiting teams. They have a little too much fun in Miami. The Patriots would even struggle in Miami. It's tough to compete in that city. And that's for visiting teams, let alone being based there. And you look at the teams. The Marlins have been terrible for 20 years. And the U hasn't been good enough for 20 years. And the Dolphins haven't been great for the last 20 years. But the Miami Heat have been consistent, winning with different players and different styles and different eras and through different changes. They've been consistent because they're just a well-run company. Like in Alabama football, succeeding through the changes. Even the Patriots, for the most part. Duke basketball, right? Going through a lot of changes, losing players, different times. The game's changing, one and done. Spread offense in college football, they're always successful because they're well-run. On the flip side, you have poorly run organizations, just like poorly run companies. They could hire a great CEO, and you wonder, like, how come that didn't work? Just because it's a poorly run organization. It starts at the top. And there are plenty of those in the sports world. The Washington football team under Dan Snyder, the Cowboys, at least after Jimmy Johnson, the Knicks under James Dolan. Doesn't matter what you do. You can hire whoever you want. You can sign whatever player you wish. As long as those guys are running those teams, they're just not well-operated organizations. They're not going to have the success. The Heat, though, are the opposite. The Sixers are the opposite of the Heat. The Sixers now 12 straight appearances in the playoffs without getting out of the second round. Since Dr. J retired over 30 years ago, they've made one conference final. When you think of NBA teams, I think you probably think of the Sixers before the Heat. Right? Philadelphia, passionate sports town. Basketball's been there forever. You had Dr. J, and you had Dawkins, and you had then you led to an Iverson. Now, more recently, a Joel Embiid, Moses Malone back in the day. Right? You've always had talented players. They had the great jerseys back then. Passionate fan base, big city. Have never had that playoff success. And earlier I mentioned the three C's, confidence, culture, conditioning. While the Heat may have all three, I don't think the Sixers have any. And as I look at these series, I understand why we are where we are. Because another expression that they often use is that you have to feel the pain before you can taste the champagne. And when you look at these teams, the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Celtics, all are too young. When you have a star player that's 25 years or younger trying to lead you, it's not going to work. And those three teams, that's the case. Ja Morant, Devin Booker, not even Devin Booker because the Suns, they're going to move on because Chris Paul, right? But you got Ja Morant, you have Luka, you have Jason Tatum. They're all 25 or younger. It's a lot to ask for. Plus, the Celtics have a first-year head coach. The Grizzlies head coach is 37. That's a lot of youth to ask to go win big games. And Michael Jordan, Luka Doncic has been phenomenal. He's the second highest scoring player in playoff history on a per-game average, only behind Jordan. And I think Luka is going to be similar to Jordan in the playoffs, where he is not going to have that second star, right? The Bulls finally got Scottie Pippen, and as Jordan hit 28 years old, now finally he could win in the playoffs, and he went off and won a bunch of championships. Luka won internationally before he came to the NBA. He has won before, he just hasn't done it in the NBA, because A, he's still probably too young to lead a team on his own. Again, Jordan was 28, LeBron was 28 at his first championship, Shaq was 28. Luka, I think, is just turning 25, so he's still young. But also, he just doesn't have that second star to play off of. Once Jordan got Pippen, then he never lost again in the first round. In fact, I don't think he ever lost a series again, period. Or was Pippen on that first team that they got close in 90 before winning the championship? Right? Pippen came in maybe 89. So, yeah, maybe that first year they lost before getting to the championship. And then they won six championships. You get the point. For Luka Doncic right now, he just doesn't have that sidekick. He's like Jordan in the 80s, putting up huge points, was clearly a star, but was just a little too young and didn't have that great role player. That's Doncic right now. Anyways, that whole tangent is because guys still have to, you got to wait until you're a little bit older, right? Experience is still important. A lot of these guys, too young to win championships. Jordan had to wait until he was 28, LeBron 28, Shaq 28, and that's why the problem with the Sixers is they have the age, the experience. Joel Embiid is 28. Doc Rivers has been a head coach for 20 years. James Harden has played in a lot of playoff games. He's in his 30s. And it still wasn't enough. Now, when I look at the teams remaining, right, the Heat are the second oldest team in the league. So I get why they're a well-oiled machine. The Bucks are the fourth oldest. The Warriors, the sixth. The Suns, the seventh oldest team. We could be left with four of the seven oldest teams left standing. But again, I bring it back to the Sixers and their disappointment because the Sixers have that experience. They're not some sort of young team. They're not being led by a 24-year-old Luka Doncic. You have Joel Embiid and James Harden. And yet, when they needed Harden the most, the statistics are very troubling. Last night, James Harden was 0 for 2 in the second half. In the second half of games this series, James Harden made four. If you remove game four, where he was actually very good, but that was the outlier. You take out game four, Harden had four made shots in the second half of the other five games combined. He had 14 points in the second half of the other five games combined. That's putrid. Right? That's terrible. Last night was the first time he played over 40 minutes and did not get to the foul line. First time it's ever happened in his career. And in elimination games, last eight elimination games, James Harden 1-7 in those games, shooting under 40% from the floor, averaging over six turnovers, 23% from beyond the arc. He's bad when you need him most, and I think in large part, I think it's because he just doesn't care. Now, we played a bunch of audio earlier. If you miss anything from the show, find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. But I forgot that we had this Jay Williams clip. Now, this is from a month ago. Jay was on ESPN's Get Up. This was from the beginning of the postseason. But I think it's worth bringing back because it goes back to something I've been saying the last couple weeks. At the start of the postseason, we were all discussing who has the most pressure. And most people said James Harden. And then James Harden was kind of asked that question. He said, no, I don't feel any pressure. And a lot of times athletes may say something like that because they're trying to save face, trying to put on a brave face. I think Harden may have just been actually telling the truth. I don't think he did feel any pressure because he probably doesn't care. And if you don't care about something, you don't feel pressure. You only feel pressure when you actually do care because you don't want to fail. You don't want to let somebody down. You don't want to look like an idiot. That's when the pressure comes in. Harden was probably telling you the truth. Like, I don't feel any pressure because I don't really care. He showed through his play this series, he looked like he didn't really care out there. Here is the clip from Jay Williams. I think this was a month ago today when the playoffs were just getting going and we were talking about James Harden and his pressure. Here's what Jay had to say about this idea that Harden didn't think he felt any pressure.
It's the, I don't have anything to prove. Mm-hmm. Like, you have everything to prove. You want to win a championship. And that's why we all play this game. And I get all the individual accolades. I get people saying that he's, and I'm one of these people, he's one of the most innovative offensive players I think the game of basketball has ever seen. But at the end of the day, James Harden has been so close to winning championships that this is probably one of his best opportunities to do so, playing alongside a guy that should be the MVP of the league, having a top 15 all-time coach on the sideline, having the right defensive schemes in place. There should be something for everybody to prove, and just saying that, that doesn't sound like the truth from James Harden.
Yeah, you had Joel Embiid as a sidekick. You had Doc Rivers on the sidelines. You have even good role players. Tobias Harris and Maxey are good 3 and 4 options if Harden could just be a 1 or a 2. But apparently he doesn't have that left in him anymore. Right? James Harden kind of hides behind this, I'm a playmaker now. It worked pretty well in Brooklyn when you had Durant and Kyrie. It's not going to work in Philly when you have to be that number 2. Especially when James Harden's beat up, you got to be that number 1. Don't be a playmaker if the guys you're hoping that are going to make those plays are Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey, because they're good role players, but they're not ready to run a team or take over just yet. If there ever will be. In fact, when you look at this Suns-Mavericks series, and we've seen this a lot in the playoffs, right? Why has the home team won all these games? Why has the home team been so much better? The Suns have blown out the Mavericks at home, and then the Suns get blown out on the road against Dallas. And it's a talking point that one of my brothers always talks about in the playoffs. That it's because role players, they're role players for a reason. They can't be stars because they can't handle the big moment. And that big moment comes on the road. When you're at home, right, it's easier. You got your fans behind you. You feel good. They're cheering you on. When you go on the road, it's a whole other animal. You're on the road. A lot more pressure on you. You're not familiar with the rims. The fans are booing you. More pressure on you. You're an underdog probably if you're on the road. And so that's why you'll see these role players have big games at home, can't make a shot on the road. And that's why they're role players and they're not stars. So that Suns-Mavericks series, the Suns probably will win Game 7 at home because it's the difference. You know, Luka Doncic is going to do his part. Can he get enough support from his role players? Probably not. Meanwhile, for the Suns, like, Chris Paul's been terrible the last couple games. But the Suns are at home, so the rest of the team's probably going to step up and play well. But I go down that path because the idea being, like, role players, right, you can't count on them in these spots. They're role players for a reason. So James Harden, you can't just sit back and try to rely on Maxey and Tobias Harris. There's a reason why they traded for you, why you're getting paid $40 million. You're supposed to be the star. That was a terrible series for Harden and the Sixers. And I go back to the three C's, conditioning, culture, and confidence. And the last two teams left standing in the East probably check all three boxes. The last two teams that, well, I'm assuming, that's assuming the Bucks get past the Celtics, as they should. But the last two teams to win the East also check those boxes. The Sixers, the Heat and the Bucks. The Bucks will play Game 6 tonight. I think they close it out with Boston. But what we already saw Wednesday was those three C's. The confidence to come back in the fourth quarter, the conditioning to be able to do so, the culture. We've seen that throughout, where their role players don't mind being role players to Giannis. And credit to the Bucks, because the role players actually did step up on the road in this case to win that game in Boston. With Portis and even Drew Holiday. But the Bucks, they checked those three boxes, the three C's. So too do the Heat, and I think there's a reason why those two will be the ones meeting next week for the Eastern Conference Finals, the last two teams standing in the Eastern Conference. Confidence, conditioning, culture. And also experience doesn't hurt either. Those are kind of the things you need. The Heat check the boxes. The Bucks do. And the reason, at least part of the reason why the Sixers are so disappointing, is because they have the experience. They have the age, the experience, the star power, and yet they still are unable to check really any of those other three boxes. And now this is a 12th straight playoff appearance for Philadelphia without even getting past the second round. That's lousy. When we come back, speaking of James Harden and his precipitous drop-off, we will rank. There's so many to choose from. I tried to narrow it down to the top five. But what we've seen from James Harden, look, 3 years ago, he led the league in scoring, averaging 35 points per game. Now he's scoring 4 points a second half. What a drop-off in 2 to 3 years. Really 15 months. He played pretty well in Brooklyn last year, about a year ago. Maybe it's an injury. Maybe it's just you hit 32 and he's fallen down the slope. I don't know. But when we come back, five athletes that have suffered a similar fate, where their careers just completely dropped off and it happened so quick and nobody really saw it coming and it was a bit of a surprise. I'll rank the top five. I'll try to come up with the top five. There's so many to choose from. And we'll do it next. It's the Mar Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We've been talking about the Sixers getting eliminated, how embarrassing it has been for James Harden. It's also kind of sad, too, like when you watch these guys and you see that guy's kind of a shell of himself. You never want to see somebody. This is not the case for James Harden because he's still young and he was good not too long ago. But whenever you watch an athlete like hold on too long, you think like, or even like an actor sometimes, a little too old, still out there. You're watching Robert De Niro try to deliver kicks in The Irishman. It's like, this is kind of sad to see. John Sterling still trying to call Yankee games, botching. It's like, oh, man, he used to be so great. It's sad to see them go out that way. James Harden to a lesser degree. It is kind of sad to see, like, man, what has happened to this guy? But he's only 32. It's not like he's, you know, he's not 85-year-old John Sterling. He's supposed to still be at least at the end of his prime. So I tried to put together a list of five athletes, and this was very hard to narrow it down to five. I originally had James Harden in the list, but then I thought, no. Let me get a fifth name in here. So the idea is five other athletes that have gone through a similar drop-off as quickly as James Harden has. I got my five. There's plenty you could pick from. It's today's, because we do it almost daily, today's Tasty Top 5.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the Tasty Top 5.
I'm tasty.
Number 5.
I'm going to go with DeMarco Murray, number 5. Now, DeMarco, when he was with the Cowboys, led the league in rushing in 2014. He had 1,845 yards. He had almost 2,000 yards. Led the league in touchdowns, 13. He was a Pro Bowler that year, second straight season. And then he went to Philadelphia. And it was a bad fit, scheme-wise, right? He went over, that was when Chip Kelly was coaching at Philadelphia. And it was more of like running laterally instead of just downhill, and it just didn't work. He was a real bust in Philadelphia. But he was out of the league within 3 years. He never rebounded. So he was at that time for Dallas, back-to-back seasons with the Cowboys. He was one of the best, if not the best, running backs in the league. He signed a huge contract with Philadelphia. They dumped him after 1 year. He went to Tennessee, and he was out of the league when he was 29, 3 years later. And it was always, I remember at the time, we were talking, like, what happened to DeMarco Murray? He was the best running. He couldn't do anything. But DeMarco Murray, I put at number five. Because I tried to avoid, and I didn't do it completely, but injuries, right? You have to try to discount injuries. DeMarco Murray was not an injury. I don't know. He just fell off. He went from almost 1,900 yards with the Cowboys to the very next year with the Eagles, 700 yards. And he played 15 out of 16 games with Philadelphia. Yards per carry went from 5.2 to 3.6. It was quite the drop-off. And DeMarco was quickly out of the league. Number four on my list, I go Sean Kemp. Now, Sean Kemp in the 90s, I mean, he was fantastic. And he was such an athletic freak at the time that you never thought he'd run into the troubles that he did. The idea, the belief is that it was the lockout season when guys were sitting at home and nothing to do, and they actually thought the lockout would be longer. So Sean Kemp just kind of didn't take care of himself because he probably thought, well, I'll have more time to get into shape. And then it was like, all right, we got to get back to work. And Kemp wasn't ready. And he came back. He put on 50 pounds. He was overweight. And so Sean Kemp went from averaging 18 points per game to the very next year averaging 6. And the final 3 years in the NBA, he averaged 6 points per game all 3 years and was out of the league. He was a former All-Star, scoring 25 points a game. Lockout came, didn't take care of himself, got into some issues with some substances and, you know, maybe some booze. Comes back, a little overweight, out of shape, out of the league within 3 years, averaged 6 points per game the last 3 years. Number three on the list of athletes that suffered such a sharp drop-off. This is a little injury-related, but I'm going to say Cam Newton. Now, it's not directly injury-related. He's still been able to get out there and play, but I think a large reason why Cam hasn't been the same player is because of the injuries that have just worn him down. Once he turned 30, he was not the same quarterback. But it happened very quick, right? Because Cam Newton with Carolina, like in 2018, you know, they were a 500 team. He had 24 touchdown passes, quarterback rating of 94. He put together a pretty good year. The last 3 years, he's 7-15 as a starting quarterback. More interceptions than touchdowns. 12 touchdown passes in 22 starts compared to 16 interceptions. And if you watch Cam, you just know he's not the same guy. He was in Carolina in 2019. Was injured, hardly played that year, went to New England, and wasn't great his 1 year at New England. Then gets beat out by Mac Jones, goes back to Carolina, had that fun return in Arizona, and then, you know, was a disaster the rest of the way. And this one is kind of sad to see because he was such a playmaker, and if you're a Panthers fan, you adore Cam Newton, I'm sure. For the last 3 years, he's just been a shell of himself. Now, again, I tried to avoid guys where it's directly correlated to injuries. This one probably is, but he has been able to get out there and still play. It's just probably the fact that he's taken too many hits and has been beat up too much and has had too many surgeries that by this point, Cam Newton just can't get it done. Also, his style, right? He was a running quarterback. Now he's 32. He's been beat up. He can't really run as much. He was never going to beat you from the pocket with his arm, so that takes away his huge weapon. But I put Cam at number three. He went from, you know, still being seen as that franchise quarterback for Carolina to quickly, within 12 months, they were releasing him, couldn't hold on to the job in New England, back in Carolina, now he's out of the league. It all happened pretty quick. Number two on the list, I go Matt Harvey. When Matt Harvey first came up, and he grew up not too far from me. Our high school, we faced him, I believe, when he was in high school. Then he went to go pitch at UNC and then went to the Mets. And when he made it to the big leagues, and he got there pretty quick, he was a star. And it was New York City, and he was the Dark Knight. And I remember it must have been the first All-Star game at their new stadium, Citi Field. Or maybe it was at the one at Yankee Stadium. But he was the starting – it was a big deal, right? It was an All-Star game in New York, and he was the starter for the NL, and he's throwing 100 miles an hour. He was just a stud early on. Came into the league when he was 23. He was excellent his first 3 years. A sub-2.75 ERA all 3 years. He was getting Cy Young votes. Now, he did have that, like, thoracic outlet syndrome where they have to remove one of your ribs, but – after he missed 2014, he came back 2015, went 13-8, 2.7 ERA. Like, he was fine. And then the drop-off really came. His first 3 years in the league, he had an ERA under 3, was an all-star, was the next big pitcher in the league. And unfortunately, it was kind of substance abuse for him as well. He's had some issues with drugs. And since 2015, Matt Harvey has gone 25-48 with an ERA of 6. He went from being a Cy Young, and it was very short-lived. It was only 3 years. To then posting an ERA of 6 the last 6 years. And he pitched in the big leagues last year. He's not on a roster right now, at least not in the big leagues. Maybe he's in the minors somewhere. He may finally be out of baseball, but he, you know, he's bounced around. Teams keep giving him a try. He's been in the, he's lasted in the league another 6 years because everyone's trying to recapture what Matt Harvey looked like when he first came into the big leagues. And it's kind of a sad story. He was at the top of the world. There were stories that, you know, he didn't show up to practice. I think it was the World Series. When they made it to the World Series, he wasn't there for one of the practice days. He would come in late to the stadium. Sometimes he'd still be smelling of booze. He was just a guy. He was on the top of the world in New York City, had a lot of money. He was 25 years old, probably didn't know how to handle it. And unfortunately, his career dropped off very rapidly. He went from being a Cy Young to posting a 6 ERA the rest of his career. And then number one, I go Colin Kaepernick. Now, you may say this was all off-field stuff, but it really wasn't. He got benched before he started kneeling. That's why he was on, you know, he was sitting on the bench. The first time he went through his protest, he was sitting on the bench. He wasn't kneeling the first time. And he was sitting on the bench because, well, he was already benched. That was his seat for the game. But Colin Kaepernick went from starting in the Super Bowl to being a backup 2 years later to then being out of the league 2 years after that. And people can point to him being blackballed, and maybe he was, maybe he has been, maybe that's why he was never given another opportunity. But his final 2 years with San Francisco, he was 3-16 as a starter, right? And those teams were terrible. And it was really when John Harbaugh, when Harbaugh left to go coach Michigan, Jim, that was the big thing, that he was great in his offense. That's exactly what Kaepernick needed, and after that, he just wasn't the same quarterback. And he went from being in a Super Bowl to 3 years later being out of the league. Now, I know there's a lot of stuff away from the field, so maybe he should be excluded from this type of list. But again, it was also about his play. He was already benched. People forget that. Blaine Gabbert beat him out in San Francisco. He was not the starting quarterback when Kaepernick was protesting. He was the backup quarterback. He had already lost his job, and then that was part of the reason why teams didn't want to deal with it either. Because at that point, he was viewed as a backup quarterback, and they're saying, we're not bringing this guy in to be a backup with this drama. But I put Colin Kaepernick at number one. Go from a Super Bowl to out of the league like that that swiftly, and once Harbaugh left, he was certainly not the same quarterback. His play fell off, numbers fell off, the team was lousy. He couldn't win a game. I put him at number one. There's so many to choose from. You could probably say Russell Westbrook. You could say any of those athletic guards. You know, like Allen Iverson even kind of fell off pretty quick. You could say a Peyton Manning, but he was old. I don't consider him in his prime, but that last year he was terrible all of a sudden. So there's a lot of guys you could choose from in all different sports. Those were the five that I thought of. DeMarco Murray, 5. Sean Kemp, 4. Cam Newton, 3. Matt Harvey, 2. And then Colin Kaepernick, 1. Guys that seemingly in the prime of their career suffered such steep drop-offs, kind of like James Harden is going through right now in the NBA. Maybe Harden will get it back. Look, the great thing about LeBron James, why he's able to have this success, is because he is crazy about his body. And if you take care of your body, it will take care of you. And so LeBron, as he's gotten older, he's gotten even crazier about his body because he realizes, like, if I want to be playing at a high level when I'm 38, I got to take care of myself. James Harden just has never really taken care of himself. Maybe it's his body catching up to him. Maybe it's a lingering injury. Maybe it's, I don't know, just pain. Like, you know, Kemba Walker has had knee issues. He's just not the same player, unfortunately. His knee's wearing down. He's just not the same. As you get older, even if you're not a professional athlete, right? Like, you got you injure your ankle, now your ankle, you're not the same athlete, even if you're not a professional athlete. Like, you can't run as quick. You can't go out there and play pickup soccer. You injured your ankle, now you got ankle problems the rest of your life. It's just not the same. I don't know what's going on with Harden, but it's crazy that it's happened this quickly, within about 2 years. He's gone from a MVP to somebody that you watch him. It's like, man, I don't know if he should even be on the floor right now. Hey, earlier I was talking about Darius Rucker with the career change. Somebody reached out to the show and said Vince Gill did the same thing, going from one genre and then being successful in another. He started in the Pierre Prairie League. I did not know that. Sounds like a minor league baseball league. I know the band. And then went on to a country career. Now, Vince Gill, that's the one that I keep hearing in the commercials, right? Doesn't he come into town?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for you.
Yeah, how about that? Vince Gill coming to town. You're going to the show this weekend, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Luke Morrow might make an appearance as well. I think so.
Yeah, he's going to be there? Wow.
I mean, yeah, we'll have
breaking
to see.
News.
Still waiting for the confirmation. But, yeah, I mean, look, Darius Rucker is a concert that if you live in Charleston and you haven't seen him live, I think it's just your obligation to see him live wherever he is because he puts on a phenomenal show. There's no doubt about it. And Vince Gill, all these guys that come to Charleston and gals.
Patrick Davis, right? That's who's performing this weekend?
Right, at the Windjammer. Yeah, you can still get your tickets on, I believe, pdmusic.com. Our guy, Patrick.
How about that? Get to hear his song about the Gamecocks or his other song about the Gamecocks or that other song about the Gamecocks. I don't really know. I'm not familiar with Patrick Davis and his music. I just see the songs that he writes about his Gamecocks. And that's what I see come across the radar.
Tell you what, the Spotify plays on those songs are high.
Yeah?
Are high, very high.
There you go. That's what you do. I've always said that, right? The smartest thing you could do is come up with a song that is based around a day, and then radio stations will play it every Friday. What was that stupid song? Was it The Cure, like Friday I'm in Love? That terrible song. And then radio stations love to play it every Friday. Manic Monday, right? You play it every Monday. Fleetwood Mac had a song. I remember what it was called. Something about a Monday or a Tuesday, right? You play it every week. That's the smartest thing you can do. Or you write a song about a city, and then that city's always going to play it. It wasn't exactly what Sinatra was going for. He was successful. He didn't need to do it, right? But New York, New York, you hear it today. All these years later, they play it all the time in New York. Empire State of Mind, all these songs. And then the other one, of course, is very specific, but Semisonic's Closing Time. Then every bar we played here to wrap up a show. Everybody always plays stadiums when the game ends for you to go home. That's what you got to do. Those are the tricks. Or in this case, you just write a song about the Gamecocks, and then a bunch of Gamecock fans are going to listen to the song, and there you go. Boom. Now, my father, I always knew when my father was going to my parents go to a lot of live shows, and I would always know when they were going to a concert and who they were going to see because my father would have a tradition that he would only listen to that musician.
Ooh.
Leading up to the concert.
I don't mind that.
So, yeah, you got to get the Patrick Davis playlist going here all weekend to get ready.
You know, today on Fan Talk, there might be some Patrick Davis that gets thrown in every once in a while. Who knows what happens on a Friday around here, Luke?
Yeah. When my parents would get ready to go to a Stones concert, right, that whole week, you're going through the Rolling Stones catalog. Got to get ready for the show.
Tomorrow Rents are cool folks, it seems like. Very
They're
cool folks.
Cooler than their kid, their youngest kid, I can tell you that much. So, yeah. When we come back, the NFL schedule has come out. I will give my favorite pick of the season already, and it's an upset, and we'll do it when we come back. The season's about 4 months away. It's never too early to start picking games. I'll give you my first for the 2022 season when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Now that we have the NFL schedule, you can start looking ahead. It's exciting. Vegas starts putting out some of the lines. I love it. The season's still 4 months away, but it's never too soon to look ahead. To look ahead. How about that? We used to do, we'll bring it back as we get closer to football season. In fact, we should have been doing it. I just remember this whole little bit we used to do where we called the I Got Five on it. And it was, putting $5 to give you a bet each day. And I should have been doing that throughout the NBA playoffs. So I have to bring that back. But here you go. Here's your pick for the day. I have this trend. We talk about it every year, maybe usually closer to the season. But we got the schedule yesterday. We got the week one lines that came out. They put out a spread for every game of week one of the NFL season. I have this trend that I bring up every year in the show. Every season, there is a touchdown underdog that wins outright week one, dating back over the past decade. 2011, the Bengals were 7-point underdogs. They beat the Browns on the road. Most of these wins are on the road. 2012, the Redskins were +9. They beat the Saints on the road. 2013, the Titans were +6. They beat the Steelers on the road. This was all week one. 2014, the Bills were +7, beat the Bears on the road. 2015, Cowboys were +6, beat the Giants on the road. 2016, the Patriots without Tom Brady were +9, beat the Cardinals on the road. 2017, the Jaguars were +6, beat the Texans on the road by 22. 2018, the Bucs were +10, beat the Saints on the road. 2019, the Titans were +6, beat the Browns by 38 on the road. 2020, the Jaguars were +7, beat the Colts. Now, last year, my pick, I believe I went back to that well. I think it was Jacksonville. Was it Jacksonville the Colts again last year? I got it wrong last year. Oh, I know who it was. I know who I liked. I told you I got it wrong last year. I liked the Lions at home against San Francisco last year. That was the pick. And the Lions, it was a wild game, if you remember. It was 41-33, week one last year. And the Niners won. So I got that one wrong. But last year, the trend, it came through because it was actually the Steelers. The Steelers were 7-point underdogs in Buffalo last year, week one, if you recall. And they beat the Bills. They scored 17 points in the fourth quarter, and the Steelers won outright. So I stopped at 2011. I could go back further and see. But I could tell you, since 2011, it happens every year where you have a touchdown underdog or more, usually on the road. That's why they're such a big underdog, and they win outright. So with that said, it's never too soon to look ahead. We have the lines out. Let's look at week one for this year, and we're looking for underdogs of 6 points or more. There's quite a few in week one. You have the Pittsburgh Steelers, the aforementioned Steelers, who checked this box a year ago. They're 6.5-point underdogs on the road against Cincinnati. Intriguing. You have San Francisco. Let me give you the underdog. You have the Bears, 6.5-point underdog at home against San Francisco. Kind of goes back to my pick last year. I thought the Niners going on the road to the NFC North was going to be a loss, doing the same thing, but instead of the Lions, they're taking on the Bears. Then you also have the Giants at the Titans. Week one, the Giants are 6.5-point dogs. It was a couple years ago that the Titans were heavy favorites at home against the Browns week one. I gave that pick out. That was my choice that year, and that came through. The Browns beat them by 30. And then the fourth one. We have four games where you have a touchdown underdog in week one, and the fourth game's the one I like the most. You have the Colts, favored by 8 in Houston. I like the Texans to not only cover that number, but I'll take Houston to win outright. The Colts have not won week one since 2013. It has been almost a decade since they've won their first game of the season. And for the Texans, I remember last year telling you the Texans, they won week one last year. And I said, this is probably the only game they're going to win. But I picked, that was one of my picks last year, take the Texans week one. And they blew out Jacksonville last year. And I think the Texans were an underdog. So this year you get the Texans at home, 8-point underdog at home in a divisional game, way too much. And not only that, you get Matt Ryan in his first game for the Colts. So you have the Colts who haven't won week one in a decade. You have Matt Ryan just getting used to his new team. He goes on the road to Houston. Everybody is going to be so low on Houston because, Lovie Smith, Davis Mills. Davis Mills is really underrated. I think Davis Mills was the most impressive of the rookie quarterbacks last year, but nobody talks about him because nobody cared about Houston. They were lousy. You didn't watch him. You couldn't pick Davis Mills out of a one-person lineup. The only time you ever heard of Davis Mills was when people were mocking him for his long neck. But he actually played really well. He outplayed Mac Jones when the Texans played the Patriots last year. He was the best rookie quarterback a year ago. So, when I look at week one, it happens every year. It's happened every year since at least 2011, where a touchdown underdog wins outright in week one. Week one is always the toughest to predict. You're trying to get a handle on these teams. Week one's a toss-up. I saw the spreads come out last night. The Colts, 8-point favorites. Week one at Houston, on the road, 8-point favorites, way too high. That means they'd be, what, 14-point favorites at home? No chance. Get that out of here. So I think absolutely Houston covers the number. I think the Texans win outright. So there you go. The season is 4 months away. It's never too early to look ahead and talk some gambling. My favorite pick of the NFL season so far, because we only have the spreads for week one and then some random games here or there. Houston, 8-point underdog, but I'd also take Houston. I think they win outright week one. And Matt Ryan loses his debut with the Colts. Carson Wentz lost his debut with the Colts. Phillip Rivers lost his debut. That was on the road against Jacksonville. They were big favorites. The Colts 2 years ago, Phillip Rivers went to Jacksonville, divisional game. They were favored by a touchdown, new quarterback. They lost. Knocked me out of my elimination pool, my suicide pool in week one. I'll never forgive Phillip Rivers. It was brutal. I think the same thing happens this year. Matt Ryan, new quarterback, heavy favorites on the road in the division against the Texans. I think the Texans win. So there you go. Run to your sports book now. If you're making a trip to Vegas this summer, keep that in mind. Week one, the Texans will beat the Indianapolis Colts. First official prediction of the 2022 season here on the Morrow Midday Show, just under 4 months out. The season begins, at least the first Sunday, is 4 months from this past Wednesday. So just under 4 months. We'll see if the trend continues this year. Four teams to choose from. By the way, the Falcons, they're 13-point underdogs week two against the Rams. And week one, let me see, where are they here? They are 3.5-point underdogs at home against New Orleans. Carolina opens as 4.5-point underdogs at home against Cleveland. If you think Deshaun Watson's going to be suspended, maybe you take Carolina right now as a 4.5-point dog, because otherwise that number is really going to move if Deshaun doesn't play. You'd be betting instead on a suspension than the actual game. But we have plenty of time to get ready for these games. When we come back, we'll wrap up your Friday. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
So finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know.
Wrapping up your Friday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Don't forget, you can take the show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or tune in radio, your smart speaker, or a free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through the app, you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Friday. You can call it a football Friday now that we have the NFL schedule out. We talked plenty about the schedule release. I gave you my favorite bet already of week one of the NFL season. If you ever miss anything from the show, make sure to catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And again, the podcasts are available through our app and also online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Hey, we have Citadel baseball all weekend long. It begins tonight at 6 p.m. It's a battle of the Bulldogs. The Citadel against Samford. Starts tonight at 6 on our sister station. We got games tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday for the Citadel. And we'll also see what happens. It should be a wild weekend in the playoffs, both for the NBA and the NHL. Could have a lot of Game 7s this weekend. Let's hope so. Let's hope all these series that are still going make it to 7 games. And let's hope. Everybody, get behind my Edmonton Oilers to win Game 7 tomorrow. And let's go New York Rangers tonight.
Let's go Pens. Let's go Pens.
It burns me to have to root for those Rangers. But I hope they win tonight, force a Game 7. We'll see what happens when we're back on the air Monday. May have to get pied in the face next week. Hey, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.